copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Solid Love in a Liquid Society. This may sound a strange title to you, more a title related to physics than to marriage. A few weeks ago, I was told by a friend, well, actually, it was not so much a friend, but someone who is working with me, Pablo, you are actually an odd person, you're kind of a rare person. You have been married for almost 20 years. Isn't that unusual, being married for 20 years? And I started thinking, am I really an odd person because I have been married for almost 20 years? And as I was reflecting on this, I suddenly realized the very strong pressure we get from society to break marriages. The trendy, what is up to date in our days is changing partners. Today, I love you. But tomorrow, I don't know. I don't know if I will love you tomorrow or not. Now, where does all this thought pattern come from? Where do all these ideas spring from? Today I love you, tomorrow I don't know. This statement is very much in contrast with what the Bible says. Love never ends. Love never fails. And this is in the context of 1 Corinthians 13, the great hymn, the great poem of love. Love never ends. Love never fails. So I guess most of you who are here are interested in marriage. Perhaps you are not all married, but you are interested in marriage. And the scope, the goal of this workshop is how to prevent marriage from bankruptcy. How can we nurture our married relationship? How can we reignite the fire of love to prevent split, especially to prevent divorce? So prevention is better than cure, and we are here to deal with this topic. You may forget almost everything I will be saying except two metaphors. If we meet again in 20 years, I would like you to remember two metaphors. I will be speaking about two triangles. The selfish triangle, which reflects the liquid love of our society, and the divine triangle that reflects the solid love. So we will be dealing with these two triangles. Zygmunt Bauman, the Polish, actually, analyst, he's a Polish, he recently died, analyst of our times, talks about a liquid society where nothing remains in place steadily. Everything changes capriciously according to circumstances. If you put some water on a glass, it will get the form of a glass. If you just spill water over here, it gets capriciously. Nothing remains steadily. Everything changes capriciously. Unfortunately, this way of thinking affects family life very much. And we could also speak of a liquid love. What is a liquid love? A liquid love is changing all the time. It's fragile, superficial. It is fleeting as an emotion, adaptable as a liquid. Where does this liquid love come from? And here I will draw the first triangle. I think this idea of the changing love, the liquid love, has a theoretical framework, has an ideology behind, and then it has practical emotional consequences. Let us consider both aspects. So where does liquid love come from? The first triangle. I called the selfish triangle. The emphasis of the selfish triangle is on my rights. My rights. Basically, three main rights that reflect, they are like a mirror of the three main ideologies, the ideologies that are prevalent in our society. First of all, my right to be happy. My right to be happy. I want to split my marriage because I'm not getting along well with you. As we will see later, I don't feel anything anymore, and I have the right to be happy. Don't I? I have the right to be happy. So happiness is what takes for granted that I can split my relationship. You will probably notice that this right to be happy is a mirror of hedonism. Hedonism. We live in a very hedonist society where my happiness is the goal. Hedonism is not only seeking my pleasure, but also escaping, avoiding all sorts of suffering, or at least what I live as a suffering situation. Anything, any situation, any relationship, any person that makes me suffer or causes me problems, that requires effort, I don't want it. I reject it. This is a very subtle dimension of hedonism. And I have the right to be happy. Therefore, and that leads to my second right, I have the right to change. My right to change. And if the first one reflected hedonism, my right to change reflects another ideology, which is pragmatism. Pragmatism. We live in a very pragmatic society. And I have the right to change spouse, a wife or a husband, in the same way that I have the right to change my car or my apartment or the place where I want to live. I have the right to change everything, having in mind always the goal of being happy. Hedonism, pragmatism, or if you prefer the word utilitarianism, you use people for your purposes. You use people. Notice all these words because they will be in sharp contrast with the other triangle. We are called not to use people, but to serve people. And loving is, first of all, serving our spouse, our wife, our husband. And finally, the third right is my right to be myself. I have the right to be myself. And this reflects another ideology, which is, I hope technocracy will not be complicating my life, My right to be myself reflects selfism. Selfism, the cult of self-worship. The me-first generation. We live in a society where the me is put in the first place. The me-first generation. I have the right to be myself. Hedonism, pragmatism or utilitarianism, and selfism. Now, notice that the center of this triangle is the ego, myself. Everything revolves around me, the ego. Men and women, lovers of themselves. Lovers of themselves. Who in the Bible referred to this sort of people? Do you remember? The Apostle Paul in Titus. He says, in the last days, I do not pretend that we're in the last days now, this would be another topic, but in Titus, Paul says, in the last days, there will be men, philautoi in Greek, lovers of themselves. They are unable to love others because they love themselves so much, there is no room for anyone else in their heart. Their heart is filled with themselves. So if your heart is occupied, there is no room for anyone else. Lovers of themselves. Selfishness, self-love, kills marriage. Enemy number one of marriage is the ego, the self. So notice that the ego is the center. And the ultimate result of this triangle is that you use people instead of really loving them. You use people instead of serving and loving them. This is the world's model today. Narcissism. We live in a very narcissistic society. You remember the myth of Narcissus. What happened to Narcissus? Finally, do you know the end of the story? He drowned. He was so much in love with himself that he drowned. In many of the Western European countries, there is an increasing number of young men and women who deliberately, willingly decide to live alone, not to marry. Is this something natural as human beings? I don't think so. We were created to share. We were created to be alongside, to have companionship, to have partners. So something anti-natural is happening in our society. We are going against the natural trend. Being alone as a free choice, deliberate choice, is legitimate in certain cases. Of course, it is deliberate. But when there is such a rising in the percentage of people who decide to live alone because they do not want to commit. We'll see that in a minute. To commit to others, the lack of commitment, that means that we have some problem. There is some social and personal pathology behind. I remember a guy who told me, we were talking about marriage, and he said, if there are taxis, free taxis, why should I buy a car? That he was referring to marriage. If I can have a woman anytime, a free taxi, why should buy a car with all the burdens a car implies? I prefer to take a taxi whenever I want to. That reflects the selfish triangle. So notice that this triangle is a mirror of the ideology of our days, and it puts a lot of pressure on young people and also on married people today, the world's model. This is the world's model and the devil's work. There is a devilish spirit behind this, because that leads to using people instead of serving them. And notice that there are half-truths here. The devil is the specialist in half-truths. You remember Genesis 3? So God has told you so-and-so. God had said that, but he distorts reality. Notice these three statements. I have the right to be myself. Isn't that fine? What is wrong with this? I have the right to be myself. I have the right to change if I need to change. What is wrong with change? And I have the right to be happy. Should I be a masochist all my life? I have the right. So half-truths, the distortion of reality. So when you take these statements out of context, then the devil uses them. And this is how he is influencing our society so much. Now, this is a liquid, fragile love. A fragile love that leads most of the times to bankruptcy. So this is the ideology behind. How is it expressed in terms of emotions within marriage? In your outline, you will notice that I used two sentences. Being in love is much more than the bliss from the beginning. Being in love is much more than the bliss from the beginning. You have the outline with you? You have got the outline. The myth of the loss of the loving feeling, I don't love him or her anymore. Many couples come to us, professional counselors. I'm a psychiatrist, sorry, I didn't mention that in the beginning. I should have. I'm a professional psychiatrist. I've been a clinical psychiatrist for almost 40 years. Patients come to us with an excuse, with a statement. I love him or I love her, but I'm not feeling in love anymore. I'm not feeling in love anymore. The loss of the feeling seems to justify the end of the relationship. Because I don't have feelings anymore, then it is most natural that we split, we break the relationship. How shall we respond to this argument that it is a result of the liquid love, the selfish triangle? Two arguments, two reasons in our answer, which are very important for us as Christians. First of all, being in love is much more than the bliss from the beginning. We cannot reduce being in love to a mere emotion, especially to the original version of falling in love. What I used to feel at the beginning of the relationship. You know, this original feeling, the original feeling you had, if you have been married or you've been in love, you will remember the emotions you had in the beginning. Experts tell us that this original version lasts only about, guess? About 3 years. It lasts about 3 years. It has to do with a number of reactions, neurotransmitters, adrenaline, dopamine, etc. It is explained in terms of biochemistry. Of course, it's not just chemistry. I am not in love because chemistry is functioning, but the other way around. Chemistry is functioning because I am in love. But anyhow, there is chemistry behind, and the original feeling has a deadline, like milk or a yogurt has a deadline. Basically, 3 years. And we have to be prepared for this. We have to be prepared. Now, the fact that the original feeling lasts for 3 years does not mean that the feeling itself, romantic love, love as an emotion, lasts only 3 years. Not at all. Romantic love, love as a feeling, may continue for the rest of the relationship, 20, 30, 40 years. What changes is the way we experience it and the form it is shown, the practical ways it is shown. Romantic love, when you are 18, is experienced in a very different way from when you are 30. And romantic love when you are 30 is expressed and felt in many different ways from when you are 60 or 70 or even 80. What has a deadline is the original sensation, the original bliss, but not romantic love as at all. I think a metaphor helps us understand it. Think of a river. A river has the early course, you say in English, for the river? The early course of the river, okay? How does the water come down in the early course of the river? Can you tell me?
Fresh,
quickly. It's very bubbling, okay? In the middle course, the water is very different. And by the end, when it's about to get to the sea, you hardly see any movement. I ask you, is it still the same river? Yes, of course. The river is exactly the same. What has changed is the form, the river, the geography, the orography of the river. So exactly the same with romantic love. Romantic love can remain for many, many years. But it is absolutely naive to expect that the original version of romantic love will last for all this time. There is a juvenile stage of the relationship, and if we want to stick to the juvenile stage of the relationship, the only thing we are showing is that we are immature people, juvenile people. And some men and women at the age of 40 want to recapture the ways they behaved when they were teenagers. This has one word, immature regression. It's a regression to immaturity. An expression of maturity is the capacity to adapt yourself to the middle course of the river or to the late course of the river. So by that stage, a question of personal reflection. How is my river? How is my river flowing? And especially, how is my triangle? Now, the second statement, love is much more than falling in love. We have seen that feeling in love is much more than the original version. And now, the second statement, love is much more than falling in love. This is the second misconception. To reduce love to a mere feeling. This is a mutilated type of love. Certainly, romantic love, love as a feeling, is essential in marriage. But there are also other aspects of love that come together with the feeling and cannot be neglected or discarded. This is not the subject today, but there are basically four dimensions of love. The word love, as C.S. Lewis beautifully put it in his book, The Four Loves, the word love has four basic words in Greek. Love is friendship, and we all know what a friend is like, someone you enjoy being with, someone you enjoy talking with. We'll see that in a minute. Communication is so essential, the element of friendship. I think one of the problems of many young people today in their relationships, perhaps not so young, also in older relationships, is that they are perhaps very good lovers, but very poor friends. Very good lovers and very poor friends. And even their love is reduced to that original version we mentioned in the beginning, friendship. Then we have the supreme form of love. The supreme form of love is the agape love, the self-giving. Self-giving. Now notice that the agape love is the only love that does not require positive feelings. And that is very important. The agape love does not require positive feelings. This is why we are called to love with agape our enemies. We are called and we are able to love our enemies with the agape love because this does not require previous positive feelings. Friendship requires feelings. I choose my friends because I like them. There is a feeling, I like my friends. But agape is not a feeling, but a choice. Agape is a choice. I'm willing to do the best for you. What can I do for you? There is a strong willingness to help. Agape is a strong willingness to help. Incidentally, some people say, well, especially in Christian circles, and this is a problem especially for certain single people, if I do not marry, I am missing the highest expression of love. That is not true. The highest expression of love is not sexual intimacy. The highest expression of love is agape. Sexuality is the highest expression of physical intimacy. That is true. Sexuality is the highest expression of sexual intimacy. But the highest expression of love is, as Jesus said, that you put your life for another person. When you put your life for another person, this is the highest expression of love. The agape love, the self-giving to the point of death. Self-giving. And this is exactly what Jesus did with us. Self-giving instead of self-loving. Self-loving, self-giving. These are the contrasts, as we will see in the second triangle. And love is also affection. What is affection? Stoge in Greek. Affection is that mysterious kind of binding. The other person is sort of part of mine. There is a mysterious binding in such a way that when the person is away, I miss her or him. I miss you. I miss you. Actually, affection is felt not only with people, but it can even be felt with pets, for example, cats or dogs. Of course, it's a much poorer quality of affection. But when a pet dies, if you love the pet, you will experience some kind of mourning, some kind of bereavement. Why? Because there is some affection. That is the word. There is some affection. There is some link. It's an emotional link. So affection is that strong link. So eros, which is the feeling, romantic love, friendship, agape, and affection. We cannot reduce love to just romantic love. All sorts of love are, all these four sorts of love are necessary. Now, let's move to the other triangle. Now, the center of this triangle is not the me, as in the previous one, but the we or the us. Us or we. Again, three elements. There is a foundation. There is a foundation, which is the covenant. The covenant. Then the relationship grows in love. And that leads finally, and this is the roof of the triangle, the roof of the building, it leads to faithfulness . The love that never ends, the love that never fails. Now, when we say that the center is the us, it's not only the spouses, my wife and myself, but that includes God, the three. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. Now, let's consider a little bit in more detail. A solid foundation, the covenant. Why is the covenant so important in marriage? A covenant is commitment, requires commitment. Love clings to a decision, and a covenant is much more than an agreement. A covenant is deeper, solid. A covenant is exactly the type of relationship that God has chosen to relate to us, to his people. Because a covenant is the only framework that guarantees stability in a relationship. This is why God chose a covenant, symbolized in the rainbow, the covenant from the beginning. God symbolized his covenant with humanity with the rainbow. We symbolize a covenant also with the ring, with the ring. But a covenant is the only guarantee of the solid love, of the solid relationship. Why? Because a covenant does not depend on feelings. A covenant is a decision. A covenant is commitment. One of the main problems in our society as a result of the selfish triangle is that there is a crisis in commitment. People don't want to commit. And this is an expression of individualism. Covenant has to do with the foundation of the relationship. And on this foundation, love can grow quietly without pressures. I remember a young woman who told me, "I cannot give myself sexually to my husband because I don't know if tomorrow she will leave me. That's normal. That's very natural. Understandable. If there is no the foundation of the covenant, it's very difficult for the solid love to grow. Covenant implies trust. I can trust you. And trust is part of the solid foundation. Why is sexual sin so serious? I don't think the reason is because of its very nature. Sexual sin is serious not because it relates to sexuality. Sexual sin is serious because it implies breaking a covenant. Breaking a covenant. And breaking a covenant brings forth one of the greatest earthquakes in a relationship, which is the loss of trust, the loss of confidence. When there is no trust, there is fear. On the other hand, perfect love casts out fear. Do you remember that beautiful verse? The antidote against jealousy, fear, uncertainty, insecurity in marriage, anxiety about the future, is trust, confidence. But there is no confidence without commitment, and there is no commitment without the solid foundation of the covenant. And this is only given by the presence of God, Christ, in the relationship. A healthy growth. Let's consider now a little bit more how love grows. And I will again mention 3 points. Let me find the... I think there are basically 3 elements in the growth of love. It could be summarized in one word. So we are going to consider this, okay? We stack this and we are going to consider this. How does love grow? We have seen the importance of the covenant. We see how love grows. The key word is closeness. Or if you prefer it, intimacy. Closeness or intimacy. Now, with all respects, and I don't want to sound frivolous in saying this, I would like to say that the relationship within the marriage reflects the relationship of the Trinity, the 3 persons of the Trinity. Jesus says, the Father and I, we are one. There is a wonderful closeness, intimacy within the Trinity. And I think God's design of marriage for us, for human beings, is essentially defined in terms of closeness, intimacy. Now, what do we mean by closeness? It's not only physical closeness, although of course it includes physical closeness, but it's a global closeness. Many married couples are worried because their sexuality does not work. Now, think for a moment the symbolism of sexual intercourse in human beings. That's most interesting. Let me. Human beings, men and women, are the only mammals in the creation whose natural position, bodily position for sex is face to face, front to front. Okay? There isn't any other mammal in the creation. The natural position for all the other mammals is back to front. Okay? The male covers from the back of the female. Human beings are the only ones whose disposition is such that sexual intimacy implies eye-to-eye contact. That is formidable. I find it extraordinary. Because sexuality is the physical expression of a deeper intimacy. When you can look to someone right to the eyes without feeling embarrassed, that expresses what?
Closeness.
Confidence. You feel at ease. You feel well. When you cannot look at someone to the eyes, that expresses embarrassment. So, sexuality most of the times works when physical intimacy expresses this global intimacy that allows you to see your spouse eye to eye without embarrassment. No anger, no resentment, no remorse, no homework to be done, etc., etc. There is a kind of penetration which is much more important than the physical penetration. And it is penetrating the soul of your spouse. With your body, you penetrate the body of the spouse, of the wife, but with your soul, you penetrate her emotionally and spiritually. That penetration is as important as the physical penetration. How do we call this sort of penetration? Empathy? Empathy. Putting yourself inside the other one. Inside the other one. This is exactly what the sexual intercourse is like. Inside. Empathy is coming inside your spouse. So closeness is a global intimacy. And the ability to get close to your partner is one of the best indicators of health in marriage. That kind of global intimacy. Now, how do we nurture, how do we make closeness grow? Many ways, but I would like to mention three. I will just make the three of them the list and then quickly. Communication. Again, they are a mirror of the Trinity. I'm following the model of the Trinity, okay? I'm following the model of the closeness within the Trinity. Communication, acceptance, and collaboration, working together for one purpose. Let's consider briefly the three ingredients of closeness in the image of the Trinity. So first of all, communication. There is a lot of communication within the Trinity. The Father speaking to the Son speaking to the Father, etc., etc. Communication is essential in marriage. But communication is not only words. Again, this is a topic in itself. Communication is not only words. An introvert, there are many differences in temperament. An introvert speaks very little. But although one may speak very little, you may convey a lot. Because words are not the only means to communicate, as we'll see in a minute. Communication, verbal communication, gestural, through gestures, gestures, our gestures. Many times our gestures show, although they are just form, a form, they show something very important. I care for you. One gesture is punctuality. Punctuality is one gesture. Time and again, my patients tell me something I like to hear. It's one of the best compliments I like to hear. I like you treat us punctually, because that shows that our time is important for you. Punctuality. And other kinds of gestures that express messages of love. Attitudes. Attitudes. And above all, the most important way of expressing communication and closeness is the presence, your presence, being alongside, being there in the right moments. Many marriage crises have one clear starting point. On that date, meaningful date, birth of children, birthdays, times of suffering, crisis, you were not there. You are absent. It is very, very important that we are there alongside with our spouse, especially at the two extremes of life, in the happiest moments and in the saddest moments. In these two poles, it's very important that we are together, that we celebrate together, and that we grieve, we mourn together. Very important. Be very sensitive to this. And communication can also be, of course, physical communication, which it's not only sexuality. Sexuality includes tenderness. And tenderness is not exclusive of women. Men can also be tender when they want to. When a man wants to seduce a woman, he knows very well how to be tender. But then all the tenderness seems to be over when he has got all that he wanted. Tenderness is very important. And spiritual communication, praying together is an expression of the presence of God in our relationship. There was an American marriage counselor, very experienced marriage counselor, who made a survey on 800 couples. That's quite a good survey, 800. Out of these 800 couples, only 3% got to divorce. Of those who had the regular habit of praying together, only 3%. Why? Because praying together is the expression of God's presence in the relationship, and God's presence brings forth the strengthening of the covenant, the growth of the love, and finally the strengthening of the faithfulness. You remember the triangle? The foundation, the covenant, the love, and the faithfulness. This is why God's presence is so important in the relationship. And finally, the collaboration, working together for the same purpose. The French author Saint-Exupéry, who wrote the book The Little Prince. I don't know if this is the English title, The Little Prince, Le Petit Prince, in French, The Little Prince, said, loving is not looking at each other all the time, but looking together the same direction. That's a nice sentence. Loving is not looking at each other all the time, but looking together on the same direction. I think it's a good definition. And this way, closeness, grows. There could be other ways to express closeness, but I think we have to stop here and give place for some questions. I wish I could have time to talk about good maintenance, the place of reconciliation and forgiveness in the relationship. If marriage is like a house that is to be built, it requires repairs. You have to repair the relationship. Leaking can occur. We have an old saying, an old proverb in Spanish that says, if you don't repair the leak, you will have to repair the whole house. I think it's a wise proverb. It's important to repair the leaks, leaking in the relationship. It's much easier to repair the leak than having to repair the whole house. Forgiveness. Don't allow anger to grow in the relationship. Anger in itself is not bad. Anger, getting angry with your spouse, can be an expression of love and intimacy. I always say that the temperature, the thermometer to measure the temperature of a relationship, is not the frequency of their quarrels, how often they quarrel, but the time, how long does it take for them to reconcile. I don't mind if you quarrel every day, provided that it takes only 10 minutes to reconcile. Of course, 10 minutes is just an arbitrary. But the Apostle Paul was very wise when he said, don't let the sun... Reconciliation is very important. Do you know why? Because if there is no reconciliation, anger is stored up. It's stored up in our heart. And anger has some children, emotional children, outcomes. Anger leads to resentment. Resentment leads to remorse. And remorse finally leads to bitterness. These are the steps. These are the children of anger. Anger, resentment, remorse, and bitterness. Anger is not a sin. Remorse, resentment, and bitterness are a sin. I think we stop. Enjoy your marriage. It's very important that we are able to enjoy the good things God has given us in life. God bless you.